Well, hello everyone. Happy Sunday. Happy New Year. Welcome to 2025. What a pleasure to be here today. Welcome to Restoring Our Roots podcast. This is the voice of the Decriminalized Nature Movement. This podcast is a gathering space where we explore the wisdom of entheogenic plants and fungi, the beauty of natural healing, and the importance of reconnecting with the sacred earth. Every month, we'll be hearing from visionaries, healers, advocates, and others who are working with entheogenic plants and fungi and returning us to a balanced relationship with nature. My name is Larry Norris. I'm the co-founder of Decriminalized Nature. I'm also a part of the national organizing movement, directing folks all across the U.S., giving them training and tools, et cetera, to help pass policy in their local municipality. If you have any interest in that, please reach out to us at decriminalizednature.org. We'll put the links in the podcast bit as well. I'm thrilled to co-host this podcast, Restoring Our Roots, with our board members going live every 2 weeks on Sunday. So you'll see myself. You also see some of the other board members as time moves forward. And I'd also like to introduce our behind-the-scenes master, or Tinkerbell in the ear, as she mentioned a minute ago, Rachel, who's been instrumental in bringing this podcast to life. Thank you, Rachel, for all your efforts for this Decriminalized Nature podcast. Our guest today is Avi Ester. Avi is an Amanita muscaria specialist who I met at the Discovery Sessions Conference in San Francisco last year on Bicycle Day, which is an annual gathering, a conference for people celebrating the rediscovery, I guess, if you want to call it that, from ergot, LSD from Albert Hofmann, and his bicycle ride across the town from work to home. Quite a lot of interesting topics to think about in that. If you want to look that up, it's pretty great. But we had a really great conversation. We talked about Amanita's benefits and risks. We talked about the neuroscience. We talked about mythology and archetypes. We talked about the inner phenomenological experience. We only had about 10 or 15 minutes to speak. So there was so much there that I wanted to expand upon. It seems like people are really, receiving your information fantastically as well, really appreciating what you're bringing forth. And of course, this is a time of year when Amanitas are very, very common. So I really wanted to expand the conversation and our dialogue today. And just for everyone else there that's watching this live, any questions or comments that come in live will be answered at the end. So go ahead and put some comments in the comment box and Rachel will bring that over. How are you doing today, Abby?
I'm doing great. I mean, I love this time of year. And it's, Amanita muscaria has really shifted my mindset and the way that I interact with the midpoint of winter. And so now, instead of it being like the saddest, like depressing, I want to crawl into a hole and not see anyone till spring kind of thing, it's more like, oh my gosh, I get to be in my cave. It's so toasty and warm. I make my favorite soups and like hang out with all my mycelial and friends, and both people and herbs and plants and cats and animals. And the more I love this point in the year, the more nature seems to respond to me in like the most magical Disney princess kind of ways. So I'm actually really loving it. So that's how I am.
Yeah, I agree 100%. This is such a great time to really dive into creativity. It's a lot of people talk about this being an incubation period, but for me, it's like the creative stuff is going, it's like you have an opportunity to say, oh, I don't have to feel guilty about sitting in front of this canvas or doing this thing that's, crafty or whatever else. You can really sort of fully be present with that. So I agree with you 100% in terms of the winter qualities that can come forward. But before we start off, maybe we could just go over a little bit of a background for you. Tell us a little bit about who you are, how you came across entheogens or Amanita specifically, where you're living at now, and kind of all the whole kind of process of you, and then we'll sort of dive into some questions.
Summarize myself. Okay. I feel like I was kind of born an entheogen. if anything, entheogens came to me to help me understand myself and the effect that I have on people. I sort of became very aware of them at a very young age, even before I actually had the cognitive understanding of what it was that was in front of me. But I had this intuitive wisdom that would just come out and make the adults around me kind of go, or like anchor them when they were on bad trips. Not that I had any understanding of what was actually going on, but I've always had a sort of psychedelic nature to me. And if anything, the entheogen experiences I found easier than the sort of spirits arriving and being like, you need to tell my living, ancestor or husband or whomever this message. They left the thing they're looking for under the microwave. And it's like, I'm like five. Why are you asking me to like, so for me, around the age of 13, I vividly remember being in like a circle of friends and somebody being like, "Hey, have you ever smoked pot?" And I was like, "Oh, yeah, of course I have." But I hadn't. So whatever, I pretended and I like watched how they were all taking tokes off the bowl and being like, "Okay." And then like somebody leans over and is like, "There's a hole on the side. It's called a carburetor. Put your thumb over it and then release." And that's, and like they're, because they could tell, you know. Anyway, and so I smoke, and as this bowl is going around this circle of children, gosh, that sounds horrible coming out of my mouth when we're talking about smoking pot, but whatever. We were all like 13, 14, 15 years old, sitting in a circle in the cul-de-sac of this neighborhood in Virginia. And as I'm watching it go around, it sort of gets to like the midpoint of where the circle is, maybe 20 kids of us sitting around, and I start fully hallucinating. Like the ground goes wavy, Smurfs start popping out of bubbles coming out of the ground. Like people's faces are all wearing neon masks of different Mario characters, and it's like, and I'm like, how is everybody seeing this kind of stuff and like so composed? And I was the only person who was tripping. Everybody else was just sort of normal stoned. And I was in a full hallucination that I found a bit overwhelming. I had no preparation for that, except that I sort of naturally hallucinate anyway. So I just kind of like took it in stride and made my way home. But it sort of opened up this awareness in me that. That somehow I was a little bit different, and that even though that sort of entry point of cannabis sort of revealed that to me, and Mother Cannabis has been such a healer in my life in ways that I will forever be grateful for. In times I've been so ill, and that's been the only medicine, no pharmaceutical, no doctor, like nothing else was able to even touch the and bring ease into the issues that I was having. And so this sort of funny partnership with the natural world began very early and really helped become, I think, my greatest teacher in understanding who and what I am, finding my way to ground, because I'm very airy fairy. I'm very like, you know, when you're getting a lot of information from spirit, when you're slightly neurodivergent, and you know, you can hear what people are saying beyond their words. You can hear what the eyebrow means and what the body shifting means and the butt and like all of these different, it's like a lot of information to like not just process and take in and then find a way to translate and then feed back all in the space of time of like, you know, a normal conversation. So like act normal, but like be abnormal, right? So, you know, for me, like the entheogens and cannabis and the mushroom kingdom, not just the psychedelic mushroom kingdom, but the whole of the mushroom kingdom and the herbs and these nature allies have really, I kind of feel like they found me and have been supporting me to learn how to cohere, navigate, and translate and be able to communicate the natural gifts that I was born with, because we don't live in a society that honors these gifts. We live in a society that demonizes them, excuse me, and calls them evil. And I mean, that's changing. You know, there's a whole renaissance of a new wave of people who are fed up with being belittled and wanting something new, who are fed up with being constrained by the ideas of people who aren't even alive anymore and want something new. And I very much feel like I'm part of that wave. If anything, I feel like I'm a leader in that wave, because I, whether by choice or not, I don't really feel like it was by choice. I was sort of activated at a very young age. So I've had decades of having to kind of work this out and figure out how to navigate in the society that we live in within the rules and regulations that breed fear and command obedience. And I am not a super obedient person. Like, you know, I'm not. Like, we can be friends, we can have mutuality, but like, please don't boss me around or like, yeah. So, that sort of, just to sort of round that into how then I brought that into the work that I'm doing now. Again, because I experienced quite intense health issues where I was getting migraines so badly that they were debilitating me for half the month. So I was like I couldn't even drive my kids to school for 5 minutes without having to pull the car over and vomit because it was just such intense pain that I was in. I had been saying maybe for a decade up to that point that the earth grows our medicine, and that if we need to diagnose ourselves instead of going to the doctor and being rushed out in 10 minutes, look in your front yard. Look at what's growing in your grass, the weeds. Look at what's growing on the logs. Just open your eyes and look. And if you don't know, look it up and ask. Feel where you're being drawn to, and then do the research. Get a book, crack it open, and look up the plant that you're looking at. And, you know, 9 times out of 10, it's going to be your medicine. And even though I had been saying that, and even like constructed a whole study around that, I wasn't doing it. And so at that point, I literally dropped to my knees, put my hands and my face into the earth, and I begged. And I got a message saying, hey babes, I think I have Lyme disease. Could you find me some turkey tail mushrooms? And I went, babes, what's turkey tail mushrooms? And she was like, oh, babes, this friend and I, that's the way we speak to each other. Not all my friends, but just that one. And so we began this conversation, and I started looking into that, and I started looking in more, and it opened my eyes to what I had already been saying. And I began to consume the turkey tail in a dual extraction form. And it healed me completely from the migraines within 3 months, completely. And then there were other sort of mineral imbalances. And while the Amanita was helping to support and manage the pain, it wasn't healing the gut issues that were creating the migraines. And neither of those mushrooms were complete enough to give me the minerals and the nutrients that I needed, that then the dandelions and the daisies and the self-heal and all the other plants that were growing in my garden were giving me. And so I then began really forging forward and healing myself and healing my children. And then, of course, after 6 months of doing that, I start getting messages. Hey, this is what's wrong with me. Can you help? Hey, this is what's wrong with me. Can you help? And I kept going, oh, it's so interesting that you've said that. Actually, and what I was learning about me, to heal my kids, to heal my family, was then applicable. And so I started making more of these different tinctures and more of these teas. And really, a tea is just a water extraction tincture. But, you know, semantics. And then it just started growing. And so then I was able to really quite easily mix the limbic system and reptilian system rewiring that I had been doing for decades. So the rebirthing work, the shamanic ancestral healing work, and the sort of foundation of really healing childhood trauma so that we can thrive. And I mixed them together quite easily, and it became such an easy, like obvious, like how did I not see that before, that the different plants help to support these shamanic processes. And I kind of almost want to use a different word than shamanic, but you know, there's these intuitive processes that come from our nature, that come from the nature of community itself, the nature of family, of birth, that mixes so perfectly with the natural world. And these different fungi and these different plants and trees all support these natural processes. They're so compatible and obvious once we have the eyes to see. And so then that's become my life, both personally and professionally, and I love it.
That's amazing. Thank you, Avi. That's such a great story. And you said so many things there. I know we had Mudu speak on a podcast a little while ago, and he had the same thing about how do we reconnect with the weeds, quote unquote, and see them as medicine. And they're grown all around us, you know, and people have what we call plant blindness. But even here, you know, I tell people all the time, you know, look inside what your environment, see, maybe there's plants right next to that grow out of your yard that you don't even know that can help you with something. So what a journey that must have been to kind of really reconnect with what's around you and not be focused on like, oh, nature's out there. Oh, nature is actually right here, right next to us. You know, that's so beautiful. And you said something earlier too, I think was interesting. I had an experience once, which were like myself and the other person flattened in this two-dimensional plane, and everything in between was black and white. And then every like eyebrow raise or smile or like little micro or breath or all that's all the like nonverbal communication became clear in this black and white space between us. And it was like, wow, this is what's happening. And probably, you know, I'm guessing a lot of people can pick up on that, you know? And so here you are speaking to these subtle things that we see that we don't really pay much attention to normally, but can tell us so much more about the story than what's actually coming out of somebody's mouth. And so really, I think that's probably also important in sort of tapping into that, being intuitive, trusting your intuitive sense to be able to then go into listening to the plants or listening to the mushrooms or listening to the other things that you're going to work with in terms of finding a pharmacopoeia that works for you medicinally and psychologically and spiritually, et cetera. So it sounds like you started off with amanitas and some other plants in the area. Was that before? I mean, obviously cannabis first, but did you start with amanita before others? And how, what was that process? Because I know amanita has, okay, no. So tell me a little bit more about that. Or, and then how did you find your way into amanitas? Because, you know, there's a lot of like back and forth about risk and that type of thing, which we talked a little bit about, maybe you can expand on as well. But then how do you sort of like find your way through that sort of mess, if you will, of trying to be like, okay, this is what's going to work, well, this is what's going to help me and not be too toxic, et cetera, et cetera. And then find yourself to being as special as you are today.
So after cannabis, I might have been 16, and I can't remember if it was LSD or psilocybin first, because we are kind of going back a long time ago. No, it was LSD first. So first it was LSD, and it was somebody's birthday party, and for their birthday party we had like a sleepover LSD party. Yeah, it was amazing. I freaking love LSD. You know, it's just such a, it's so clear, and I feel like when I'm with LSD, it's like I can hear the guardian angels that are always with me, and I can see the realms that I can, that I'm always sort of in a relationship with anyway. And I feel like it just sort of, it takes the filters that I'm very grateful exist a little bit off in a way, so that I'm actually in the various otherworldly realms that I kind of am already in an experience anyway, but like without, because honestly, I couldn't go through life seeing it that vividly all the time. It would be too overwhelming. So I'm very glad for those veils. Thank you very much. Let's keep them in place. Thanks. So, and then after that, it was, well, if I like LSD, let's try psilocybin. For me, psilocybin was always like, I just kind of felt like myself, but like it expanded the somatic sensations of what I subtly feel anyway. And it just felt like it made it more sticky. That was the word that just kept coming up. Like I was just, it just amplified me, but in a sticky way. And so it took me a really long time to make friends with psilocybin, but I really did try a lot. Like I tried a lot, but every time, no matter how big or small my dose was, it kind of was the same experience. And then,
just to clarify, you mean mushrooms with psilocybin or psilocybin?
Psilocybin mushrooms. Yeah. Yeah. A different, and you know, we're talking the 90s and early noughties. So then it wasn't like we had all the sort of choice of strain that we have today. Today we're like, you know what? I feel like doing psilocybin. Let's choose a Jack Frost. What a wonderful hybrid we've got. No. Then it was just like, yeah, we got this bag from this dude. You know, like, do you know what strain? Like, dude, it's like whatever's growing behind the farmhouse. Come on, you know? So, you know, that we didn't have that, you know, it was very underground. It was very much like being part of that psychedelic underground counterculture that I was a part of. And then I got a bit into the rave scene. So that introduced MDMA and ketamine and a whole host of other things. And golly, I had a lot of fun. oh, youth. And lots of glitter, lots of dancing, still lots of glitter and lots of dancing. I've held on to that. I feel good about that. And then I had kids. And when you have kids, all that kind of stuff goes. And so actually I was completely sober pretty much for about 8 years. And then again, I started having some crises, and and so in 2017, none of the processes that I knew how to do that had healed me previously, that had helped, were working. And I needed help. And so I turned to LSD, and because I know that LSD and I are good. And I wanted to journey, but I couldn't find anybody to journey with me or to sit. And New Year's Eve was coming up, and I was really depressed. Like it was bad. And I kind of got into this funny space where I was like, look, I hold space and I facilitate profound transformation for thousands of people over the last decade. And I can't do this for me. Fuck you, Avi Yester. Show up. And I was like, oh, okay. So, you know, I showed up for me, and I journeyed alone. It was my first solo journey. And it was beautiful and profound and full of tears and letting go. And then at the end, I kind of went, okay, none of the intentions that I set did I get. But right now I'm in trouble, and this is what I need. Help me see, help me unlock what I need. And I had like 19 pounds in my bank account. And I went into this very peaceful space where I felt like I was sort of held on a cloud of gold, like golden clouds. Like it was just lovely. And then all of a sudden I was like, oh, this. And so within 3 days I had 2,222 pounds in my account. What a crazy number, like that exact amount. And then I was able to go on a journey that helped that whole healing process, and to integrate that journey over 3 months that put me in a very good stead. So like, we're not going to fast forward quite yet. So at the end of that 3 months, a knock came on my apartment door like that. And they had witnessed me do a process with somebody on the beach the day before. And they were like, hey, we want to do a psilocybin full moon journey tomorrow, and we don't have anybody to facilitate. Will you facilitate? And I asked them a bunch of questions, and they answered very good things. I liked all their answers, and I was like, okay, I'll do it. And then I did, and it was phenomenal. And being able to apply all the skills that I had cultivated and developed in my personal healing practice over the decade leading up to that. And it just worked so well. It just worked so well together. And I was like, oh, this is cool. And so then now we're going to fast forward to 2018. And my life just continued to improve and get better. And I found my way here to the New Forest National Park in Hampshire, England, where I live now, in an ancient forest filled with wild ponies. Like every little girl's dream, according to me. And I was a little bit nervous because, you know, it was a big move and it was a new place and there was so much settling to do. And there was a lot of questions I didn't have. And so I did what felt right to me, as I went and I found some trees to meditate with and just ground. Because I'm me and I apparently like to pick super intense things. The tree that I picked was a very sacred collection of trees with a lot of mythology where people go to pray. Didn't know that, but I guess I did. So I picked like one of the most intense places to go and meditate in the forest. I don't know. I'm a glutton for punishment. I like it intense. Let's jump in with the whales. And, you know, the first day I had this huge download and I was so special and I was so full of my ego and I was like, oh my God, the trees spoke to me. Aren't I so fucking great? Oh my God, my shit doesn't smell. And then the next day I went back because I'm so special and they said nothing to me. And I started going into a panic because obviously I wasn't special anymore. There was no validation coming in. And then 5 minutes before I needed to go pick up my kids after trying to meditate for 3 hours, they just went, find your mushroom teacher, like in that kind of like shitty voice, like find your mushroom teacher, like go, be gone. And I was like, what? I didn't hear you. I wanted to smack me too. It's okay. But they did not smack me. They were very gracious ancient beings who have been very kind to me. Anyway, so when I went to go pick up my kids, I was walking along the path and I heard my name. I thought it was another parrot. I turned around and there was nobody there and only a singular fly agaric. And I was like, what? What? So that kind of freaked me out. I didn't know what to do. Parents started to come. I couldn't be seeing picking this mushroom that's poisonous, right? And I got to go get my kids. So I go in and get my kids. I tell them what happened. They're like, oh, show us the mushroom. So I show them the mushroom. There's all these parents and kids and things. I'm like, oh, I don't think we should pick this mushroom because if anybody asks us what we're doing, I don't know. As tree told me, what do we do with this? So we left. And if it was there tomorrow, I'd pick it and I'd figure it out. It wasn't there. Again, I felt this horrible dread, like, oh, I missed my opportunity. Well, I was really dramatic then. Maybe I'm still a little dramatic. Anyway, I dealt with all of that, and it was okay. And the following day, we're talking, it's a Saturday now. I took the kids on a walk because you have to walk the kids when you live in a small cottage. And we were walking on an Iron Age hill fort, and my son was running ahead, and he stopped suddenly and started doing this weird jerky motion. And we noticed that he was locked with a deer, and that he and this deer for about 10 minutes, I'm not exaggerating, it was about 10 minutes, were doing this weird mirror dance with each other. And my daughter and I sort of squat down, we're like watching this. We're like, what is this? How long is it going to go on for? And then the deer leaned down, and because we were on a hill fort, which is like, you know, it goes down. We had to stand up to see what the deer was doing. And there were 17 fly agaric all there, and the deer was nibbling on the fly agaric. So of course my daughter and I just go, oh, whoa. And this knocks everything out of the trance. My son goes, what? He steps forward. He goes, whoa. And then the deer kind of like pops its head up. Its buddy deer comes up and he's like, dude, what are you doing? That's my voice to it. I don't know what the deer said, but I'm pretty sure it was like, dude, what are you doing? And the deer was like, I don't know. And then they kind of like skip off down the hill and off into the heathlands where all the gorse were blooming. And so we went and we picked 7 caps, and I still have some really big pictures. They were like huge, huge caps. And I was like, okay, let's go home and I'll figure out what to do next. And that was the beginning of my journey with them. And, you know, a lot of it, if I'm honest with you, was just applying logic, right? So we've got all these big caps. How do we store them while I figure out how to work with them? Okay, let's dehydrate them. Let's dry them. I think they're really wet and thick. So if I leave them out, they're probably not going to dry by themselves. So let's put them on a low setting in the oven and just keep an eye on them. Like basic logic, right? Critical thinking. And it worked. And so then they all dried down. They, you know, they shrank down till about like this size from about this size. Yeah. And I spent, that was September. So I spent September, October, November, like deep in the web. Because all the books I found in the library were shit. They were all like, it's poisonous. It's toxic. Stay away. Don't consume. And it's like, well, that's not telling me anything. It's just putting fear but no, why is it like, what is this? And so I at that point, it was not a popular mushroom. It was the opposite. So I was on Irrawid and lots of very, very bad trip reports. But then I found Eastern European and Russian resources, and Google Translate was good enough. It's not like it is today, people, but it was good enough. And so I was going through like HTML blogs from the 90s, like bad colors with yellow writing level of stuff. You know what I mean? You guys remember. And translating these blogs of people who are working with this mushroom and the different preparations and dosing and uses medicinally for them. I wasn't able to find a lot of journeying information, but I was able to find quite a lot of usage information and where the parameters of safety were in these traditional Eastern European methods that I found from these ancient blogs, you know, hidden within the corridors of things. I didn't actually find that much on Reddit. It was mostly these old blogs, these sort of There were a couple papers done in the late 60s where they were pulling out the compound. So they're pulling out muscarin to create medicines. The medicines were too effective and caused hallucinations, so they never went to market, even though they were more effective than the medications that are on the market. And then I also found a paper from 1870 something where they were working with and identifying the muscarinic acetylcholine receptors that the Amanita muscaria alkaloids work with, and actually named it after the active alkaloids in that mushroom. And actually that gave me quite a lot of information about how the mushroom works within the body, within the acetylcholine receptors, how that works with the glutamate channels, why cannabis and Amanita muscaria or ibotenic acid and muscarin and muscimol are all very compatible through the cholinergic system, blah, 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 blah. And so, like, because I was basically alone and having to study these sort of like whatever I could find, I started to build an understanding of how it works in the body, how it's traditionally used in folk medicines. And then as is the wisdom of everybody who's alive still in the psychedelic underground, is you start low, you go slow, and you find your dose. And so that's what I did. And it just became an intuitive thing that if you're going to start low, I made a tincture out of it. You start with a drop. You maybe go to half a pipette, maybe a full pipette. Okay, cool. Now we know what that is. And then I just kept increasing until solstice of that year, where I was like, okay, I'm going to do a 5 milliliter journey and see what happens. And so I did, and I liked it. And it was very special first lowish dose journey that acted more like a mid journey. And then I learned after that you could smoke it. So then I began sort of experimenting with different combinations of smokable herbs with tobacco and without tobacco. And I just kept growing and learning. And if I'm honest, within like a year or two, the Amanita Dreamer appeared and more people started talking about Amanita muscaria, and then more information started coming out. And I still had some ego issues. So I would get a bit like, actually, no, you're talking about psilocybin, and psilocybin and Amanita muscaria are very different. And like, I just didn't like my attitude. But, you know, again, there was this whole way that they were working with me to help me see that I don't need to be validated in that way, that I am good enough as I am. And that's been, you know, that's been a long journey with him, but I can only be grateful, because part of the huge amount of knowledge that I have about Amanita muscaria, each piece has given me a piece to heal myself. And that piece then I get to give to other people. And then I get to sort of put together this beautiful tapestry and weave together the mythologies, because the stories are also medicine. Having our ancestors be able to speak to us through time space, that's medicine. And be able to weave that in with the plants and weave that in with Amanita, and like find archaeological reliefs on temple walls in Mexico that show psilocybin and Amanita being used together for spring equinox ceremony. Oh my God, tell me more. What's the story? And then how can we revive that medicine? What is the story, the intention, the energy, the healing that comes when we listen to what's been forgotten, when we can piece together those subtle nonverbal things that are left for us to find? And so then this has been my joy and my journey for me personally, and also creatively, and then also within the community that I serve.
Well, I had a whole list of questions I was going to ask, and now I'm totally going to throw those out the window because you have so much wonderful things to say here. I just want to kind of play off of all this because there's a lot there. It's beautiful. Yeah, I'd love to hear your story about coming on to Amanita, about, I mean, seeing the deer and seeing, you know, how much the deer also loves these mushrooms. And I think there's something there too that's really fascinating. You hear this cross-culturally and also makes us sort of reconsider our understanding of consciousness of the animal kingdom when these animals are pursuing these substances as well. They're also looking for this. You know, you hear this a lot about, you know, sort of the ancient northern Siberia and northern Scandinavia and Nordic areas where the reindeer are always eating the mushrooms. And that was, you know, one of the ways that they figured out how to, you probably know the story, obviously, right? Metabolize it through the reindeer urine and all that kind of thing, which is, again, you know, trial and error. Who was the first person who's like, hey, let me give this a try, right? But you just got to give it a go, right? So, but yeah, what is the relationship, you know? What are your thoughts around the relationship? How do we listen to the animal kingdom to learn more about medicinal plants and these mushrooms? It sounds like that's kind of exactly what you did there. What was that like for you? That sort of connecting to the animal world and having that different conversation, not just the tree world and the plant world, but now the animal kingdom as well.
Well, I mean, there was no part of me that was like, oh, if the deer are eating it, that means it's safe for me to eat. The deer eat everything, everything, even things they shouldn't eat. Well, when I say shouldn't, I mean my garden. I mean, I'm grumpy that they ate my blueberries this year. Anyway, so so and like the deer eat them, bears eat them, squirrels eat them, the slugs eat them, and I
Foxes,
the
right?
slugs and I what?
Foxes as well, I think, are really into them, right?
You know, like the horses will have a nibble, but they don't eat as much as the deer. You know, so it's not. I'm pretty sure the foxes will also have a nibble. I haven't gotten to get up close and personal with any badgers, even though I'd really like to. So I don't know, but I imagine that if the foxes have a nibble, the opportunistic badgers will also have a nibble. And what I've noticed is that both the, I'm going to call them the voracious deer, because the deer they eat everything. Between the deer and the slugs, sometimes on the low fruiting seasons, I'm like, you guys, can you leave me some? So it's like the sort of the wisdom is that unless something has the same metabolism as me, them eating it doesn't mean that I can. And it's folly to think that just because an animal can eat it means that it's safe or non-toxic for me. But it did sort of like open up like the idea of this is a food source that they're not voraciously fully eating, meaning that they'll leave it. They'll have a few bites, they won't eat the whole cap.
Do you think it's just food or psychoactive for them?
I, based on their behavior, I am telling you for nothing, it's psychoactive. Okay. I've seen deer run, and when deer have been eating it, they're like, they're more curious, they're more brave. They'll go for walks with me. They'll forage with me without running away. And that's really unusual for the deer around here. That's just not normal behavior. And while some people are like, oh, Avi, you're just magical, it's like, yeah, okay, or they're also high. So, you know, like I'm yes, I'm magical, thank you very much. And maybe like we're not just gonna get whisked away with the fairies and see if we can apply our whole selves, our minds, our emotions, our intuition, and some critical thinking. I'm a big fan of critical thinking. I feel like the more people who have critical thinking, the better the world will be. So it's like there's this sort of confluence of understanding. And then it's like that the animals also bring medicine. So it's like, what is the medicine of the deer? What is deer medicine? And I don't mean that in an entheogenic sense, because I know that there's many traditions that identify the deer as the animal archetype for that medicine. But I mean, take that away just for a moment. What is deer medicine? What did the deer teach us? Right. And then when we're looking at the distinction between, say, red deer, fallow deer, muntjac deer, reindeer, we're talking about very different deer. They have different behaviors. They have different mating. They have different living situations. They have different, like the red deer is male led, the reindeer is female led. So even though, yeah, okay, they're all deer, it's very different medicines. And if we follow the ancient medicines and the cult of the reindeer, that goes back to a matriarchal society that was nomadic in nature, that believed that the deer mother was this great divine cosmic mother that held the sun and the moon and the stars in her antlers. And she led her people along the pathways of winter to food and warmth and survival. And some of those ways were brutal, because if you were injured, you fell behind. That was you being swallowed by the deity of winter. And that happened. That was a part of life. But come spring, new birth will come. And so you have these different medicines that come with the different animals. What is squirrel medicine? Like, what is cheekies, skirteries, save it away? You know, what is that kind of medicine? What is mouse medicine? So like the different animals speak to us differently. And I see that as complementary to any plant or mushroom medicine that exists. In a similar way that Amanita muscaria is mycorrhizal and grows in relationship with trees, only grows in relationship with trees. Although I have to say this year, I didn't know it, but they grow with gorse. Gorse isn't a tree. It's like a big bush, but they grow with gorse. And I also found them with bramble, and bramble's also a bush. So like, I mean, you know, mycorrhizal relationships expanded. And that's not something I found in a book. Like, that's me walking my land, talking to the spirits of the land, the ancestors of the land, asking them to lead my feet to what I wanted to forage, and them leading me to like pathways filled with golden liberty caps. Like, I've never seen the Libbies, one, that golden in color, two, like, seriously, it was like the golden brick road. It was like the golden Libby road. Like, all the pathways were filled with golden Libbies. It was remarkable. And I'd follow these pathways and I'd find a gorse bush. And in the gorse bush was this phenomenal Amanita muscaria, or like, through a funny little pathway following the Libbies. And they'd bring me to a grove of birch trees. And there in the center birch tree, and only at the center birch tree, because I swear the ancestors like to fuck with me, but only at the center birch tree, I heard the message, was the Amanita muscaria. None of the other birch trees, like in previous years, only the central one. So in that foraging, in that relationship, what I was looking for was Amanita muscaria. That's what I was looking for. But what I found was what I needed, which were this pathway of golden Libbies. And when I did nibble them, like, so much ease and grace, and it's okay, and let's play. Let's have fun with this. Can you hear the squash, squash, squash of your feet on the ground? It's so squishy. Like, look at this bit. Oh, it's bouncy. And playing with it to follow this golden pathway. And then this sort of listening to that center point. Okay, it's time to get to the center of things. Yeah, let's play and find our center. Here's the medicine. So I'm listening to the medicine of the birch. I'm listening to the medicine of what the forest is showing me, despite the idea that I need to go out and forage Amanita because I've got all this stuff to do. And so on that pathway, just to weave in the animals, I see the beautiful ponies. And I'm like, ooh, maybe I can go play with, nope, okay, can't go play with the ponies. Are you sure I can't? No, okay, fine. So, and then I turn the corner and there's a pony that's there and she looks at me. And then she looks that way and I follow her gaze, and there's a whole herd of red deer and they're all just chilling. And so I'm like, okay, here's the medicine of the horse. Here's the medicine of the deer. And I follow the deer again down these pathways, and they're showing me as I listen. And so it's less about this, me following this idea of what I've read in a book or what I think I need to do, and just being open and humble enough to listen and follow. And then if I don't find all the Amanita muscaria that I need to find, and it's only that one in the center of the grove, what is that telling me? Because it's got to be perfect, because that's what I found. and applying that onward, applying that in every situation, even when I'm creating recipes, even when I'm making medicines, even when I'm facilitating journeys and ceremonies for people or myself. It's like, so who's shown up here? What people have shown up here? What have they brought as a symbol or token for their journey? Are there insects in the space? Are there, you know, when I walk to the space and there's blackbirds at the door, it's like, oh, the medicine of the blackbird. Let me go get my little book. What does the medicine of the blackbird sing? And even though obviously I'm not going to like catch the bird and take it into the ceremony with me, the medicine of the blackbird is with us, singing those ancestral songs that come forth through our lineage, whether we remember it or not. And so this is the way that I work with the animals and the mushrooms and the plants. I use my knowledge and my wisdom to find the stories. And then I listen to the stories that are here now, your story, our story today. And that's the medicine. That's what's going to bring forward whatever the experience is that we need. And within that, I'm just going to use the caveat that it's really important to know your dose. And more than listening to me or you or anybody else, like, of course, know your parameters, you know, understand that at like, let's say one of the fatalities could have been anywhere between about 60 grams and 120 grams. We don't know because the reports were just too vague. But, you know, okay, you want to stay underneath that if you have fear and if you don't know what you're working with. And if we know that, say, over 20 grams, you start stumbling into these very wobbly territories where, you know, you have people who've gone into comas, depending on dose and all these things, then, okay, you know that that's a parameter. And the opposite end of that with the microdosing stuff, and it's everywhere. Like, seriously, you could type it in. There's so much information. A good sort of 30% of it is hogwash. It's just silliness. You can still find articles where they're like, Amanita muscaria grows in shit. It's like, oh my God, does not, you know. And like, it's the same thing with psilocybin. There are so many substrates for psilocybin. Like, stop it. You know, yes, one of them is shit. Anyway, so it's like know your parameters. It's the same thing when we're talking psilocybin. If your strain is Golden Teacher, your dose is going to be very different than if your strain is Penis Envy. You don't want to get those two mixed up. It won't be, it'll be different, be very, very different. So within that, within knowing your parameters, knowing the safety and the experience that you want to have, where can then you rest into that knowledge and activate your wisdom, activate your listening, the animals, the plants, the trees, the stories. Like, that's where it starts getting fun. That's where it starts becoming more than the sum of its parts.
Yeah, that's great. And as soon as I saw you have the plants, you have the fungus, you have the animals, you also have the place, which is something that I think, you know, is also another archetype that speaks to us. Now, it sounds like you're saying you just were walking through these forests and there's liberty caps and amanitas everywhere. You don't really hear too much about traditional use of mushrooms in England. What are the stories, or, you know, not typically people are like, oh, it's in other places. You might hear it about in Celtic, I guess Celtic maybe, you know, kind of in a similar region, but more in Ireland, you hear those stories, but I haven't really heard too many. There's like ancient mythologies around mushrooms coming out of England. Of course, nowadays, England has one of the strongest or more difficult policy regarding these types of things. Maybe not amanitas, but other mushrooms and other things are very, very illegal. Cannabis as well. I think they're trying to push it back on the Schedule A again or whatever, something like that. Someone told me there from back in the day, about a year ago. So what's the place? What's sort of the history of the place? And we do only have about 14, 15 minutes. We want to maybe do some questions too. But like, can you speak a little bit about the place, maybe some of the history, mythology of the place that maybe some people aren't aware of? And then how do you bring that forward to people, maybe politicians or other people, policymakers in the area, to say, hey, this is part of your ancestry. How can we be criminalizing something that's part of your ancestry? So what are your thoughts around that in terms of the history of the place or the speaking of the place?
Well, so I'm going to jump from the word mythology to folklore. And in the folklore here, and in the traditional like country use and celebrations, it's never died. Maybe not Amanita muscaria, but psilocybin, definitely. You go to any village, and I guarantee you 50% of them all go out nibbling on Liberty caps. Guarantee you. I've never met somebody in a pub who, when they were a kid, didn't go out and nibble on Liberty caps. You know, so it's always been here. And then you can start seeing these different traditions that have never died. Like you've got the maypole in May around Beltane. And even though that's been Christianized now, still you get those maypole and May Day celebrations. And when you go into some of the more pagan villages, and their maypoles are very much about, you know, penis and vagina and like that whole initial fertility celebration. And they've got their fiddles out, and all the women are dressed like goddesses, and half the men are dressed as green men, kind of like how you are right now with all of your green behind you, but like it's like in like crowns of laurel around their heads, and some of them paint their faces green. They're all on Liberty caps, and most of them actually, it's Liberty caps from like that grew over there, you know, like just down the hill, and that's still present. And so it's like, okay, well, there seems to be some very obvious things both within the folklore of the different regions, and you've got lots of pixie fairy folklore, not just here in my forest, in the New Forest National Park, but also down through Cornwall, up through Wales, up into Scotland, throughout the Midlands, tons of folklore in Yorkshire. I could keep going because these are all very different regions of this country, but all of them, they have their folklore. All of them, they have their funny little traditions, some more funny than others. Like in Wales and in parts of Cornwall, they still get horse skulls on like sticks, or wear them as masks and like go around and having these like caroling or interactions with like these huge horse skulls. It's really weird looking. I really recommend you look it up. It's very entertaining. And so while they're doing that, you've got these people with fiddles playing these jigs and like these traditions which have never died but have just become more obscure. And the more you sort of scratch the surface and you start hearing the motifs of the red and the white, you start hearing the motifs of the pixies and the different kinds of things you have to watch out for or be careful of. Or if you go and you go to this place, and when you go to that place in the right season, what do you find? Liberty caps growing. And so you start being able to piece together through the folklore and the anthropology and the traditions that are still alive, the lost recipes, the lost recipes which are still being enacted, are intuitively still done. And it's everywhere. All over this country and beyond into mainland Europe. And actually, the more you go further into the areas that weren't as deeply impacted by like witch trials and the obliteration of culture, then you start finding more of these similar stories, these similar folklores, these similar ideas that connect fairies to medicine. That medicine is not just to help you get over that cold, but to help with babies being born or conceived, to help with the spiritual initiations that use our entheogens. And so it's all still alive if we have, again, going back to what we just said at the beginning, if we have the ears and the eyes to see and hear it. And then just to sort of speak to the legislation point, here in this country, as long as I've lived here, and it's been 19 years that I've been here, you're allowed to grow 3 cannabis plants for personal use. You're not allowed to grow to sell. You're allowed to grow for personal use. And that, I don't believe, is going to change. I haven't heard any policymakers say that that's going to change. And I have made friends with a consultant on a drug enforcement tasking. And so I do sort of understand, one, some of the serious drug issues that we do have, because when the mafia is peddling dangerous drugs, and that's mixed in with the less dangerous drugs or the things that shouldn't necessarily be illegal, we do have issues because they start making dangerous recipes and there's a lot of violence, and that's not okay. And I do not support that in any way, shape, or form. In terms of a local law enforcement perspective, they're not really worried about, you know, kids who are picking Liberty caps. They're worried about the mafia who's bringing in heroin and fentanyl and you know, stuff that hurts people. They're worried about huge kilos of very strong strains of either cannabis or psilocybin that actually, why do we need that much of that? And it's sort of, there's this wrong action that's coming down in force to make that behavior stop, while in the local law enforcement, they're not really doing much about the kids who are growing or picking, and they're not doing much about the local cannabis growers, because that's not where the problems are. I would personally love to see some critical thinking and bright minds coming up with solutions where we have this clear sight of what's working and what's not working, what's dangerous, what we really don't want to have, and how we can shift that. And my idea in that, just one throwing it out there, would be that if people were empowered to be able to grow their own, whether we're talking psilocybin or have their Amanita muscaria, which I know is starting to come under a lot of heat at the moment, and their cannabis, then it would disempower the cartels to sell anything, because there'd be no market for them. And it seems like an obvious one to me to replace the dangerous drugs with education and support. So if people want to do mushrooms or whatever, anything, they're going to find a way to do it. Putting harder regulations isn't going to stop people. But creating safe environments and educating people how to make their own, whether we want to call them medicines or, you know, drugs or teachers or whatever words we want to use, you know, we're shifting the idea of how to make it more safe for the people who are going to do it anyway, and just creating a better platform of education and information. So I hope that was summarized and quick enough.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. And I think, you know, that's a big part that we talk about with decriminalized nature, how important it is to grow your own. And you're speaking to not just, you know, we talk about a lot for the corporate interests of the pharmaceutical companies, which are looking to swallow this up, but you're also speaking to cartels or other sort of dangerous elements that could be coming into play that could make it a little bit more difficult for people to, you know, actually be a president and engaged. So thank you very much for sharing all this. Looks like Rachel has one question. Then after that, we can pop into some conversations about how people can find you and ask you more, because I'd love to have you on again. But in the meantime, I'm sure you've piqued a lot of interest, and we'll be getting a lot of, you know, questions coming your way in terms of better ways to look at Amanita or even some of the folklore around there, et cetera. So Rachel, go ahead.
Oh my goodness, Avi, what a beautiful interview. I had like full body tingles your whole time talking your whole story, because like I had like my own little homecoming journey too. I was born in the prairies of Winnipeg, Manitoba. And so what you were talking about, like the Manitou, the spirit of all life, like she spoke to you, right? And she asked you to have a mission to do this thing, and like you came through. So I just was like, thank you for doing you, Avi, because like it's just you need, like you're like I see you like all of you, all your layers of who you are. So I just have one question from the audience. We actually had about quite a few people listening in, but just one about like just sacredness of timing with Amanitas. Do you have a personal time of the year that you typically like revisit Amanitas specifically?
Well, I mean, obviously during fruiting season. So fruiting season varies depending on where in the world you are. So in here it begins sort of September ish and runs through beginning of December. Sometimes a little earlier, sometimes no, never a little later. I've never seen it a little later. In sort of like, let's say California right now, Northern California at the moment, it's like peak fruiting season. I totally have like envy, like watching my friends who are foraging with their big hauls. And I'm like, oh gosh, I want to be there, you know? And so now that's their season. But when we're talking about working with them, when we're talking about the use of them, and basically if you pull up a pagan calendar, right? So you've got your four quarters, you've got your solstices and your equinoxes, and then you have your cross quarters, right? So in the Celtic traditions, that would be Imbolc, which is coming up around the 1st of February, which is across from Samhain, is that right? And then you've got Beltane that's coming up in May. No, Beltane, Samhain, Imbolc, and Lammas. Yeah, there we go. I've got my compass correct now. And so you've got your four quarters and your cross quarter ceremonial celebrations. Mm-hmm. And you can find your ancestral and regional land alignments, not just sort of the Celtic versions of that, but your stories of the land you live on and your ancestry, because they are everywhere. Every indigenous culture have these celebrations, full stop. And so then you'll find your motifs, right? You'll find your red and white motifs. You'll find your sacrament of wisdom and knowledge motifs. You'll know what your recipe is, whether that's Amanita muscaria or Amanita muscaria mixed with psilocybin or your somawaska or your whatever. Yeah, because different regions have their different entheogens. So you find your way, your stories, your ancestry in these cross quarter and quarter ceremonial areas.
Amazing. That question was from Nuclear Queso. So, yeah.
Nuclear cheese. Okay. Cool. Right? I like cheese.
Yeah, exactly. So thank you for that.
Mm-hmm. And that was awesome. Well, go ahead, Rachel.
No, that was just the question. That was good. That was amazing.
Great. Wonderful. Well, thank you so much. I know we didn't get a chance to talk about, you mentioned at the very beginning how amazing this is. We're on the evening of Epiphany. So I think you provide a lot of epiphanies for folks, maybe today and in the future. So thank you very much for this conversation. I just want to give you a few moments to maybe say, wrap up anything you want to like address that we didn't address, or if you have any, you know, ways for people to contact you, please go ahead and share those, and we can put those in the notes as well for the podcast.
Brilliant. Well, I'm Avi Esther. I'm really easy to find. Everything is Avi Esther. I'm on Facebook. I'm on Instagram. My website is aviester.com. It's super simple to find me. I really welcome questions and comments. I have a number of courses coming up. There's an online one that if you're interested in getting to know Amanita muscaria and you're just not quite sure, you've sort of dabbled, or you just want a container to really get to learn and receive the teachings of this mushroom. It's a very powerful container because you get to have your own experience, but then you also get to learn from everybody else's experience within the group. And that's very cool. And then I've got different kinds of ceremonies coming up, all of which you can find on both my social media and on my website. And my email is all on there. Really, I'm really easy to find and to contact. So I really welcome all that.
Great, wonderful. Well, it's been such an incredible conversation. I think, like I said, all the questions that I wanted to ask, you touched on a whole different area that I wasn't even considering. So I really, really enjoyed this. This means we got to bring you back for another time so we can maybe do one of my questions, then the 400 that you bring up after that. So I look forward to that in the future. And thank you everyone for being here. Thank you, Avi, again. Really appreciate you spending some time with us. Thank you, Rachel, as well, for helping us out from the backside of things. And thank you everyone else out there. Have a happy new year. Merry 2025. I hope this is going to be a great one for us. Until next time, tune in, stay rooted, and let's grow together. Have a great day. Plant power to the people. Plant power to the people. Where you dream is where I'll meet you.